department had to address some of the concerns, but we thought that would give an opportunity today. If those concerns had not been addressed, first of all, the department, because they are aware of some of the concerns, that the department must address some of those concerns that you are having as they address them to us here, and tell us exactly that those concerns actually they are not holding because of this and that, which they had explained to us. Now, it is upon you to pick up from what the department says if you still feel that really they have not addressed what you think should be addressed. But we as the committee, we have also decided to give you the opportunity likewise to therefore present your side of the story after the department, and the department has got to take into consideration your presentations, your concerns, and address them, and we will take it from there, we as Parliament, as to what is the way forward then after this interaction. So I am going to open up a very fair hearing so that each and everyone who feels that he or his interest have not been addressed must raise them here. And the department is also here to address this, because at the end, the committee, we are the custodians of public interest, and we are here on behalf of the public. We must be sure that I do not know most of you who are speaking on behalf of the public what interest you have behind, because some of you, there are people who are representing the poor communities here, and I do not know because it is because of some Samaritan grounds, or it is because you have some latent interest of benefiting. We do not know. But at least we here as Parliament, we really are the custodian of those public poor communities that are out there. And we also, therefore, have got to defend their interest here. So that is why we have opened up this process, that we want to hear exactly who is misleading who. And that is where we are here. So I will give this the first overview of where the problems are or what the department thinks about everything. I'll give them at least the first floor that they address us. And after that, we will have Anglo-America then presenting and so forth and so forth. I'm still waiting for the list of his to have it now. Yeah. And then we will take the process from there. But we have, fortunately here, we have the whole day to use this hall for this purpose. And I hope by the end of the day we will have achieved at least a little bit of what we intend to achieve. Let me, before giving the floor to the department, let me know who are here, who are here and representing whom. But before that, let me start by first introducing members of my committee to all of you stakeholders. I am Ngaba Ngobo, the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee of Minerals and Energy, a member of the African National Congress. And I will therefore give, I've got here the secretary, Peter Paul Mbele, is the committee, new secretary of the committee. And then I have the assistant secretary. I'll start from this side to introduce the members from Deni.
Deni Kigana, ANC.
Chris Molefe, ANC.
Tonen, ANC.
Eric Lucas, member of the committee.
Themba Mahlaba, ANC.
Okay, I will ask the department also to introduce themselves after this. The Department of Ministry.
Minerals and Energy.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've got a team with 5 years. My name is Futhi Zikalala from the Department of Minerals and Energy. I've got Nebola staff near that side. And here I've got Stefina Mutau, Lindiwe Megwe, and Sibongile Mashinini. We are all from the Department of Minerals and Energy.
Thank you very much. I will therefore go to the stakeholders themselves. I'll start there.
Thank you. I'm from Parliamentary Monitoring Group, Susan Williams.
Susan Leong from Webber Wentzel, Johannesburg.
Also Matthew van der Vaan from Webber Wentzel in Johannesburg.
Andy Gubb from the Wildlife and Environment Society of South Africa.
Hank Smith, Legal Resources Centre in Cape Town.
Josia Zaman, Legal Resource Centre, I'm an intern.
Annelise Crosby, I'm from AgriSA, which is the organisation representing the largest number of farmers in this country.
Marty Lotter, I'm the chairperson of South African Diamond Producers Organisation, and we represent the Lugal Diamond Diggers in the Northwest, Northern Cape and Free State provinces.
Carol Dixon, I'm representing the Chamber of Mines, part of the delegation.
I'm Nick Lesufi from the Chamber of Mines.
Mike Dale, Danae's Rats, representing the Chamber of Mines. Anton van Achterberg, also Chamber of Mines.
Marty Luru, Habitat Council and the Cape Environment Trust.
Lindy Wezikali Ngobese, Anglo-American South Africa.
Okay, thank you very much for your presentation. I think we now know one another here. We know who is here, who is not here. So I'll allow, therefore, first the department to give us an overview of everything about the amendment, including some of the concerns that they have tried to address. Thank you, department.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Do you want to use the screen?
Not really, Chairperson. Thank you very much, Chair. I was going to start with the comments, but I'm not too sure if you want me to start there, seeing that we're going to be listening to the issues being raised by the people themselves. So I guess I'll just start with the bill, the proposals that are in the bill. As we will all recall, this bill was adopted, the B bill was adopted in June last year, and it was then supposed to go through the NCOP process, but then there was the issue between ourselves and the Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism around the provisions on environmental management. And that process has taken us this far.
Just a little bit. Well, I'm not sure why these bells, because we do make announcements here, but we've never been disturbed by bells. Bells are only when the parliamentary sittings adjourn, or if there is a special announcement from the sitting of parliament. I do not know why we are... Okay, carry on, please.
Thanks, Chairperson. By way of giving some background to the honourable members and yourself, Chairperson, we have had a number of meetings and workshop and several discussions with the Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism around this matter. And all of this has culminated in an agreement that has three main significant pillars. And the two departments, or the two bills that are in circulation at the moment, will address these three pillars of the agreement. As we have to do so moving forward. And also, just by way of reminding the honorable members, the three pillars of this agreement are to this effect, that we are going to use one EIA system, and that the Minister of Minerals and Energy is a competent authority to implement provisions of NIMA in prospecting, mining, production, and areas as defined in the NPRDA, as well as that the Minister of Environmental Affairs and Tourism is the appeal authority on environmental authorizations. These are the main pillars. There is a detail to it. For instance, that the time frames that are in the NPRDA currently for granting or refusing applications will also be maintained through the NIMA bill that is being discussed at the moment. Now, in view of that, all the environmental provisions have therefore been essentially removed from the revised bill. As you can see, the B bill therefore does not contain environmental provisions because of that. And that starts from the long title where we've removed, for instance, the issue around reviewing mine closure, and we have added the competency of the Minister of Minerals and Energy into the long title of the act, of the bill, to explain the role that is to be played by the Minister of Minerals and Energy as far as the issue of environmental protection is concerned, as well as ensuring that there is alignment between the NPRDA and NIMA. So all of those have been catered for in the long title of the Act. Again, the issues around basic assessment reports and all of those things, EMPs and all of, those kind of terminologies that applied in the NPR, that apply currently in the Act, have been removed, with a view, therefore, to taking these through to the NIMA amendment bill. Then there are some the definitions that were, in our view, erroneously omitted from the B bill last year. For instance, the definition of exclusionary act, which has now been mentioned in the bill, in the D bill, the addition of NIMA, as we explained that, and we've also removed, for instance, the definition of waste, as that has been taken up with the amendments to NIMA, as well as the Waste Management Amendment Bill. Going through, and then we have the reference to the royalties and the royalty bill that is being prepared by the National Treasury. There is clause 3, sub 4, which was also omitted, and we've included that, and it just reads that the state royalty must be determined and levied by the Minister of Finance in terms of an Act of Parliament. Which is what is taking place currently, and I'm hoping that we have all seen the final amendment bill from National Treasury. I'm going to skip some of those that have been, as I've indicated, that have been taken up with the NIMA, through the NIMA process of amending that act. Then getting to clause 11, to clause 8, amending section 11. As you can see, the B bill, it wasn't explaining it. It didn't explain it the way we've put it now in the D bill to actually explain what it is that is meant. So you'll see that the D bill reads like this, that a prospecting right or mining right or an interest in any such right or any interest in a closed corporation or unlisted company or any controlling interest in a listed company, which corporations or companies hold a prospecting right or mining right or an interest in any such right, may not be ceded, transferred, let, sublet, assigned, alienated, or otherwise disposed of without prior written approval, of the minister. And we've had to put this in, particularly around also without prior written approval, because we have seen in practice that if it's not there as prior, we have been inundated with deals that have been struck and then people wanting, you know, retrospectively to get the minister to approve things that they have been done on the ground, and some of which have actually ended up flaunting the rules that are stated in the MPRDA. As you can see, some of the clauses around the granting clauses or the application clauses, the section 16, etc., those have also are also talking about environmental authorizations instead of EMPs, and that is part of the agreement, and that we are using the terminology from NEMA, this environmental authorization. Then there was the issue of 10 days, which will appear in, you know, all of these, you know, application, the requirements section for application purposes, which talk about 10 days. You know, the regional manager has to either reject or accept an application within 10 days. That was an error, because really that remains 14 days, and that's why we have indicated in Bill D that the 14 days is being retained. And then all the references to NEMA, the environmental provisions that have gone through to NEMA, and that is all section 16, and then up to section, and then we've got also the amendment to section 17, which has is indicating that position around which now reads that the granting by substitution, and then it reads that the granting of such right will result in the concentration of the mineral resources in question under the control of the applicant and their associated companies, with a possible limitation of equitable access to mineral resources, as well as the other amending ones under the same section. It is actually very important, Chairperson, that we note that sections, all the amendings, all the environmental sections from section 38 that have been taken throughout and taken out to NEMA, as well as sections around sections 80 to 83 in the current Act that are being aligned with the NEMA amendments at this point in time, in order for them to become, you know, to go under the authority of the Minister of Environmental Affairs and Tourism. I would like also to go to this section, to this clause, for instance, clause 21, which talks about the process of applying for this environmental authorization. Because it says, for instance, that if you apply, any person who wishes to apply to the minister for a mining permit, now I'm reading only clause 21, which amends section 27, it says that therefore you must simultaneously apply for an environmental authorization and lodge the application. That means that therefore there is this process, because as we may all recall, in terms of NEMA, you actually apply for an environmental authorization. But we have indicated in the bill that a process that will end up having two applications may well be onerous to the sector. And so if we are saying that therefore it will be a simultaneous application, it just means that we will have to align the forms after this whole process to make sure that the application for an environmental authorization is made simultaneously with any application to the Department of Minerals and Energy. And then we have also the issue in Section 27, again, the issue of 1.5 hectares versus the 5 hectares, that now the bill seeks to enlarge the area that mining permit applicants can apply for, which therefore takes them to 5 hectares. And this again has been done due to the many submissions and issues that have been raised by the smaller sector of the industry.
We are trying to catch up with all the sections of the government because we are trying to look here, but it's something else. And I've now found out she says, indeed, you are not in line with what she's trying to do.
Okay, Chairperson, when I started, I do apologize.
Yeah.
When I started, there was no presentation out there, so I was just going through so that I don't take a lot of your time. But I can go back to
because we are totally confused now, really.
Okay.
I've been trying to rush to the papers, I've been trying to look at it, she also says she doesn't understand where you are.
A map of 3 desktops, we're trying to concentrate and keep up. We've got all day, as we promised. It's too difficult with the desktops.
Maybe the best thing is to do it, actually make reference to a page. Because we do mention sections, but we don't make any reference to pages.
Okay. I think that Honourable Member and Chairperson, Members and Chairperson, I need to say that, well, we do have the presentation there, and I've noted the issues. I'll go slowly, and I've been reminded that we have a whole day to do this. But again, it's been under the assumption that the bill has been circulated and so all the people in the House actually have got the bill and that I can just touch on the issues that are significant in terms of the changes.
That is true, but the problem is that we do not know where you are when you talk. That is exactly, we do not know where to page, We have the bill, but you know you are not going page by page. You are going to the point that you want to stress, and now we don't know where you are. That's exactly the problem.
Okay, let me start where we are now on the screen. Clause 21, and that is amendment of section 27, which I've just spoken about. That's page 21 of the presentation.
Thank you.
metal rate from this.
Okay, it says, the technician says it's fine now, you can continue. I think you must stand by, you might, because we have a problem if it goes off and it disturbs our concentration. Yeah, okay, you can continue.
Thank you, Chairperson. I am, therefore, this page, goes to any person who wishes to apply to the minister for a mining permit must simultaneously apply for an environmental authorization and lodge the application. That is one of the changes that has been brought about by the removal of the environmental provisions from the MPRDA, from the B bill to the NEMA amending bill. And then we are indicating that there was an error in the B bill talking about 10 days, and we are saying that therefore D bill retains the 14-day period, which is part of the receiving of applications, the 14 days. It says that the regional manager must reject or accept an application within 14 days of receipt thereof. Next page, page 22. The B deal says that to submit an environmental management plan within 40 days from the date of notice. Now, the substitution thereof indicating the removal of these amending provisions reads, submit relevant environmental report required within 60 days from the date of notice as required in terms of the NEMA. That's now the substituting one in the D bill. So the reason that I was sort of skipping pages was as a result of what I said in the preamble, that we have removed practically all provisions that relate to environmental management. And the Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism is dealing with that as part of their amendment processes to NEMA. And I was trying to therefore not go back and keep on saying the same thing, but I will do it here and say that, for instance, now 6B, the applicant has submitted an environmental management plan. Now the new one is going to read that the environmental authorization is issued in terms of NEMA again. Page 23. Page 23, sub 3 of the Act. Again, it talks about an environmental management one. This one is the environmental management program. Despite subsection 2, environmental management program approved in respect of prospecting rights remains in force as if the prospecting right had not lapsed. Again, on this side, on the D bill, we are talking about the issuing of the environmental authorization. So we're saying that despite subsection 2, the conditions of the environmental authorization issued in respect of the prospecting right remain in force as if the prospecting right had not lapsed. Page 24. 2A. Give effect to the approved environmental management program and pay the prescribed retention fee. The D bill is now talking about giving effect to the conditions of the environmental authorization and payment of the prescribed retention fees. That is the distinction between the two bills. Page 25. Clause 28. Now, that's the amendment of Section 38, and that is the start of the provisions in the B Bill, the provisions on environmental management. It began on, in Section 38. Now, Clause 28, therefore, is now deleted from the D Bill as it has been transported to the amending provisions of the NEMA Bill. And then here, and again, that is page 26 now. New section, section 38A of the D Bill, and then 38B. Talks about environmental authorizations, as I have indicated, that they are now, we'll be using environmental authorizations in terms of NEMA. And another new section, that is 38B, providing for the transitional arrangements for approved environmental management programs and plans. That is not in the B Bill. Page 27. Section 39, as it appears in the B Bill and the Principal Act, now in D Bill, Section 39 is deleted. And so is, and so are sections 40, 41, and 42. And they are now going to appear in the NEMA amending bill. That was page 27. Page 28. Sections 43, subsection 6 to 12, section 45, section 46, section 47, section 48, and these are aligned with NEMA. So there is this alignment, because section 43 is, we may recall, and the honorable members may recall, talks about the closure of operations. And as we may appreciate, that section does not only refer to environmental issues only, but there are issues of mine health and safety and others that would still be retained by the Department of Minerals and Energy as part of closing operations, but obviously there will be alignment and consultations with the Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism. Then under Section 47, 2D, the B Bill contains the word mortgage. I must say, Chairperson and honorable members, that this has caused us quite a lot of debate as to what a mortgage is versus a mortgage. Our view is that, well, one of the views is that the bank is a mortgage, And the person who receives a loan, therefore, from the bank under these situations would be a mortgagee. If that view is correct, then 47.2D will retain mortgagor, if mortgagor refers to a bank. But if mortgagee refers to a bank, then 47.2D has got to change, and therefore assume mortgagee. So that has been there has been some debate around that. That's why it is in here, but it is one of those that are not that significant at this point in time. Page 29, Clause 48, Amendment of Section 69. Section 74 in the B Bill contains the 10 days, the 10-day period around the rejection or acceptance of application. And so the revised bill, which is D Bill now, seeks to retain 14 days, and then there's alignment also with NEMA around Section 74.4B, and then Section 79, the 10-day issue again, going back to 14 days, as is the case with the main act, with the act. And then Section 79.4B is about alignment with NEMA. Page 30, Clause 56, Amendment of Section 80. Section 81C, aligned with NEMA, as well as Section 81.2C and 3C, alignment with NEMA. Section 83 is again around the 10 days and the 14-day period. This is around the production right application. And then Section 83.4B, alignment with NEMA again. And so is Section 86. Section 86.2D, I apologize for the 20, it's actually supposed to be 2D, alignment with NEMA. That is section, this, that is page 30. I do apologize, Jefferson, but I'm not sure what happened. I do have it here. On the screen, you have it there. So maybe we need to print another. Okay, 31. Sections 93, 1B, 102, 1, 1062, alignment with NEMA, for alignment with NEMA. And Section 107, 1A, Roman figure 1 to Roman figure 8. Those have been transferred to NEMA, which is why they don't appear now in the D bill. Page 32. Chairperson and honourable members, this is now amendment of item 12. We believe that item 12.5C was erroneously omitted from the B bill, as it was discussed on the day of the approval of the B bill. And we are now putting it in here in the D bill, and it reads that where there is no agreement within 180 days between the claimant and the Director General on the amount of compensation or terms of payment thereof, that is now item 12.5C. Item 12C is in inclusion of provision 5C.
Why do you, ma'am, why do you in this section, all clauses and sections you referred to them as sections, now here is item?
Thank you, honorable member. I'm referring to it as item because the sections that appear in the second schedule to the main act are not referred to as sections. We refer to them as items in the main act. And hence here, that's why I'm referring to it as still item 12, because that's how we've been, you know, referring to them since the adoption of the main act in 2002. Thank you. In conclusion, Chairperson and honorable members, the bill intends to bring about technical improvements to the MPRDA, and as you can see, it's also about harmonizing the MPRDA with other legislation, particularly now that we have got the D bill with NEMA in a bigger way than the B bill was seeking to do, and then the Mining Titles Registration Act of 1967 as amended, the Diamond Act as amended, as well as the Mine Health and Safety Act of 1996. It's also about, you know, ensuring better cooperative governance between organs of state through the REMDEX and, you know, the Regional Mining Development and Environmental Committees, but also more so now that we are working more closely with the Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism around issues of environmental protection. And then it seeks to confirm a singular environmental management or protection entry point at government level. And so hence all of these changes to the B bill, or the majority of the changes to the D bill as they appear now in this bill, the D bill that we have today. At this point, I want to thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity, and we'll take the question.
thank you very much, Ms. Zigalala, for the clarifying input. I hope that some of the explanations that you have gone through now as to the changes that have been instituted may address some of the concerns of the stakeholders here. But nevertheless, we will then give the stakeholders here an opportunity to participate and make their input and concerns known before the committee. I have been asked because it seems that the Chamber of Mines and Anglo-America, they have agreed that in terms of time, because allocated, they would like that they swap, because one is having a shorter time, so that the other, who has got some extra time, will buy some minutes from the other. And so they felt that Anglo-America should start first, because they have a shorter input, and the minutes that will be remaining will be likewise usurped by Chamber of Mines, because they are going to have a little bit extra than allocated. In that order, therefore, I would allow Anglo-America to take over. Thank you very much. If members feel that they still want to have some clarification, probably from him before we start, let's allow members to interact with the department first before we allow the new process. Okay, Honorable Mnareng?
Yeah, I just wanted to say, to ask that for purpose of the language used in the bill and the way you have effected your amendment, you see there is one, the first term deleted means it has been removed. Then alignment means it remains, but it appears in both legislation. That is alignment, isn't it? Then transferred means it's no longer exists in the original bill, but they get into NEMA. So that's the understanding. So as we should be clear from the onset that how do we use the terminology interchangeably.
Thank you, Chair. I think I need to explain it in this way and say that where we say deleted and transferred, those two are interchangeable, because it means essentially that we've deleted them from the MPRD amending process and transferred them to NEMA. But where there is alignment, it's where, for instance, we're changing the words environmental management plan or environmental management program to an environmental authorization, where we're then adopting the terminology of environmental authorization, and so we're not deleting the whole section or subsection. Thank you.
Honorable Machado?
No, thanks, Chairperson. I think Comrade Opa, what he was just trying...
We have honorable members here. Yeah. We don't have...
Honorable Munareng, he asked the same area that I also wanted to raise. Understanding that we may not be legal people by background as members, especially, probably if I could get an understanding as to why would some be transferred and some be aligned? Could there be a reason to say, in principle, what should be aligned is because of this reason, what should be transferred is because of the reason? I'm also checking on the very same agreement between the ministries as to, for instance, it might be implicated in one way or the other in the very same alignment and transferring, as it's not reported to say that there's this arrangement over a certain period. Now, I'm not sure whether this one was to be dealt within NEMA only, and it cannot be referred here, which means if this bill is used and it comes to some of these arrangements, it would have to be referred into NEMA. I'm just checking on that. Thank you.
Honorable Tibera.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I might have come late and not heard this. I just want to know, on page 6, the waste, and on the other side, revised bill, waste has been deleted. Why?
Any further input from the committee, is that all? If not, therefore, Ms. Galara.
Thank you, Chair. The agreement between the two ministries, as I indicated initially, covered three main principles. The one is that we're going to use one EIA system. The second one is about the competency of the Minister of Minerals and Energy to implement the provisions of NEMA in areas of prospecting, mining, production, exploration. And the third one was the appeal authority, who is the Minister of Environmental Affairs and Tourism, on issues pertaining to the environment and not all the appeals. Now, when we, as part of that broad, you know, three-pronged statement of the agreement, there are details to that. For instance, one of those details is the issue of timeframes that appear in the MPRDA, as well as therefore being retained, the timeframe. That is the detail, that's part of it. And as well as, again, the other issue of details is the issue of the transitional period, so that we give the sector, the mining sector, sufficient time to get into this move of certain issue, of certain provisions from the MPRDA to NEMA. And if I may say, with your permission, Chairperson, the two ministers agreed that that transitional period would be 18 months. We attempted to put it in the bill so that it's clear what we're talking about, but at state law advisor level, you know, there was a view contrary to that. And I guess that therefore it may appear in NEMA, but as part of the detail again around that same issue of transitional arrangements, the ministers agreed that whichever bill is approved first, you know, will therefore, you know, that will determine the beginning of the 18 months. Now, we cannot have, for instance, the transitional period of 18 months, in our view as DME, only appearing or maybe to appear in NEMA and not appearing in the MPRD amendment, because we need to ensure that the sector that we regulate understands that they have 18 months within which to get into grips with what the new dispensation says. That is the one issue which I'm attempting to respond to Honorable Mahlangu on, the issue of 18 months, which does not really appear in the bill because it has been removed at state law advisor level. But again, when we talk about the deleted, transferred, and aligned areas, when we delete or transfer them, it is because then, in terms of that agreement, those provisions are therefore deleted here, but then transferred into NEMA for the Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism to put them into the in their NEMA amending bill, for them to therefore appear in NEMA, the Amendment Act of NEMA. And therefore we've been working together on making sure that these provisions are not deleted and then fall through the cracks, but that are deleted this side only to be caught, you know, by the amending process of the National Environmental Management Act.
And when they are aligned?
Now, when they are aligned, Chairperson, it is when we cannot take away either a section or a subsection in the MPRD Act or amending Act, a bill, because taking it out will not mean that it is being catered for in NEMA. As I was giving the example, for instance, of aligning around environmental management, a section that would have environmental management plans or programs, and saying that we're not deleting that one, we're aligning it, simply because we are now taking the definition and the process of an environmental authorization from NEMA and bringing it into the amending provisions of the MPRD bill, with the hope that they will remain there as part of the MPRDA Amendment Act in the end. So we are aligning to such an extent that what they will not, or what is not, again, what is not in their powers to do, for instance, Section 43, as I indicated, that Section 43 talks about closure applications. Closing a mine or mining operation or a prospecting operation is not only about environmental protection, but it's also about mine health and safety issues. It's about, you know, other things that we want to make sure are happening in that. In that, I mean, it could also be talking about social and labor plan issues around retrenchments, etc., etc. So we've got to align that one with NEMA, because they will be providing for your the other studies that you've got to do that are environmental when you're closing an operation. But at the same time, it's a section that we've got to retain as DNE, because it's talking about the broad closure of an operation, and it talks about us consulting mine health and safety. It talks about us talking to the Department of Labor about issues of retrenchment and bringing in all of those issues. So that is when we are aligning. The last one, Chairperson, is about page 6, waste and the deletion of waste. We have deleted it on the basis that waste is provided for in NEMA as well as in the Waste Management Amendment Bill. So they are addressing it as deeds, you know, in their act. So whatever is waste from our side will be, at all times when we're talking about waste, will therefore be taking our cue from the Waste Management Bill as well as the NEMA itself. So it's not that we're deleting it for it to fall through the cracks, but it's being caught by the Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism.
I think that is all. Are you satisfied, member? So I will therefore allow Anglo America to make their presentation. Thereafter, the Chamber of Mines.
Chair, whilst you're whilst we've got a moment, I wonder whether any of my colleagues have a similar problem with a bill that's currently being considered, and whether it is in fact the same one, the bill that the department presented is the same one that you distributed last week Wednesday. Last week Wednesday, you sent out by email a version of the bill that has on the front page Bill 10D, and Chair, it runs into about 70 pages. But the department now, on its PowerPoint slides presentation, referred to a bill that doesn't correspond with the clause numbers that we've got in the version that you distributed by email. And I checked with one or two of my colleagues who got the same bill, and it looks like we don't have the same one that the department used in its presentation. So it looks like there is another version of Bill 10D, or Draft D. It is actually the final of Bill 10B. And we would like some clarification on this, because we've discussed it with your committee people, and we must just get the right bill. We must have the same piece of paper on the table when we start discussing it.
Yeah, thank you very much for your input. May the department respond to that?
The department gave us loads.
That was a presentation. A presentation and a draft is different. The department was, what we have here was a presentation based on this final draft. But let the department explain themselves.
Chairperson, as far as we know, we've got B10D, and we are using B10D. But if the colleague there and his other colleagues have got something that we need to correct, because we are definitely using the same bill, then can they please indicate it to us? Because that bill that we're talking about is referred to as that, and it goes up to page 76.
Yeah, this is also what I have, and this is what I think I distributed. Not unless if you have mistaken the presentation with the bill, because a presentation is just highlighting, not unless where she referred to sections, they don't correspond with the sections that are in the draft, B10D. I just want also to get clarification from the stakeholders.
Allow me, I'll just show it by way of example, and I'll try to do it as simply as possible. I'm now looking at page 10 of the presentation, and it says at the top, clause 11, amendment of section 16. And I look at page 16 of the draft of Bill 10D that was distributed last week. And my printer also printed it out to come to a total of 76 pages. But I look at amendment of section 16 on page 16, and it refers to clause 12. So in the presentation, clause 11 corresponds with section 16. In the bill distributed last week, clause 12 and not 11 corresponds with section 16. And I'm slightly worried that I may miss other changes that may have happened between the version that you distributed last week on Wednesday and the version that the department used for purposes of its presentation. And that's what we want to clarify, and if necessary, reserve our rights. Thank you.
Yes, Department, can you respond to that?
Chairperson, this is how I'd like to respond. One, we are talking about B10B, and we take all of these clauses as they appear in B10B. Now, the B10D bill has got some changes to it, and in terms of clauses as well. So in order for us to make sure that we are together, one, I do want to guarantee that the D-bill that we used is the one that I've said has got 76 pages and is referred to as such. But then we are also looking at B10B because that one has been agreed to, and now some of the clauses have changed. If the only issue that my colleague there is talking about is merely the clause, the assurance is there that we use the same bill, the D bill, but then again we had to use the B10B bill in order, because this is the one we're taking from and indicating in the presentation the changes that have happened from the B bill to the D bill. In terms of reserving the rights, I really want to assure the colleagues there that there is no other bill that we're using except the B bill as agreed to last year and the D bill that is being discussed today. Thank you.
Yeah, I remember. Maybe the best thing is to have the serving stakeholders making their presentations and raising their reservations.
I heard you come a bit late. Yes, this is the process which we are going to follow now.
We first
have to get points of clarification, then they can then make their presentation. And this was a point of clarification whether the bill that you are referring to, is it the same bill? Now, the clarification is that indeed they are using the same bill. And once we agree about that, the presentation should then follow suit.
Oh, if there's a directive, that's fine. I thought I was still grappling with the clarification question.
I think we agreed now that we are using the same bill. There were only those technicalities, points of reference from B10B to B10D. If we agreed with that now, then we can allow, therefore, presentations as have been tabled. Can you, Anglo-America, can they lead us then?
Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members of the Portfolio Committee on Minerals and Energy, representatives and officials from the Department of Minerals and Energy, ladies and gentlemen. Anglo welcomes the opportunity to comment on the MPRDA amendment law. However, it laments the short period allowed for comments. This submission should be viewed from the perspective of a major investor in the mining industry. A bit about Anglo in context. Anglo American PLC is a leading mining and natural resources group with interest in platinum group metals, diamonds, coal, base and ferrous metals, and industrial minerals. It is geographically diverse with presence in 64 countries. It is the largest private sector investor in South Africa. Anglo has to date concluded BEE deals valued at 59.992 billion rand, calculated in 2007 money, since 1994, thus acting as a catalyst in the formation of all today's leading BEE South African mining houses. Anglo's current approved projects in South Africa are approximated at $5 billion US dollars. Anglo's South African operations generated 45% of the group's operating profits in the year ended 31 December 2007. At the outset, Chairperson and honorable members, we would like to state that Anglo supports the Chamber of Mines submissions on the environmental aspects of the bill, which they will table during their presentation. The proposed amendments to Section 11 of the Act require that any change of interest in an unlisted company which holds a prospecting right or mining right must be approved in writing by the Minister. This proposed amendment will, in our view, result in further delays to decision-making in the mining industry and may lead to unforeseen and unintended consequences. We submit, therefore, that the current Section 11, Subsection 1 of the Act be retained as it currently is. Alternatively, that the provision could be extended to include ministerial approval
for a reduction in BEE equity ownership below that which attained at the time of granting or conversion of mineral rights. The concept of concentration of mineral resources referred to in clause 13EB needs to be defined and clarified to eliminate ambiguity and uncertainty. References made in the bill to conditions that the minister may impose regarding the participation of communities. It is suggested that the conditions to be imposed by the minister be set out in the act. It is also submitted that the applicant be consulted on viable options to facilitate community participation and to provide an opportunity to the applicant or for the applicant to present to the minister the extent to which participation by the community has already been facilitated where this has been achieved. In addition, we believe that community participation should be implemented on a commercial basis. The requirement in clause 14B to obtain a certificate from the Council of Geoscience when applying for renewal of a prospecting right is in our view not desirable and will lead to further delays in the renewal of the right. It is therefore submitted that this provision be removed from the bill. It is important that prescription of levels of beneficiation should recognize existing efforts on beneficiation in the mining industry and allow for voluntary participation to enable the mining industry to focus on the core business of mining. We believe that cumulative impacts of mining activities should be considered at an early stage and should not be left or held off until mine closure stage. Finally, Chairperson and honorable members, as part of our written submissions, we have also made suggestions to address certain technical aspects of the bill. Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members.
I don't know what members want to interact now or to allow Chamber of Mines to present and interact. What is your opinion? Because it looks like they are agreed between themselves that their presentation is more or less common. So let's allow the Chamber of Mines also to keep present and interact with all of them together. Okay, right. Chamber of Mines.
Chairperson, honorable members, and officials of the department, we thank the portfolio committee for giving us this opportunity to submit comments on the Minerals and Energy or Mineral and Petroleum Development Amendment Bill B10D. The focus of the chamber's comments will be confined to clauses which will amend sections of the MPRDA that were not tabled for amendment in the B10 bill as introduced in the National Assembly, and to which the Chamber therefore did not have an opportunity to comment. So we really value this opportunity, and on behalf of the Chief Executive of the Chamber of Mines, who is at the Conference on Wealth Mining Investment Conference in London, to speak on behalf of the mining industry in South Africa, actually to promote investment in South Africa, that the Chamber really values this opportunity, that it also is heard about his comments. Now, the presentation from the chamber side will be made by Professor Mike Day from Dines Reis, and will be assisted by the chamber's legal advisor, Anton van Achterberg, and Carol Dixon, who is a member of the environmental policy of the Chamber of Mines. Thank you very much. I'll send over to Dr. Mike Day.
Anglo, can what is the mission? I told him to be here. Now he's disappeared. Stan, can you go and get this technician again? I told him to remain here because this machine is troublesome.
Okay, honorable members and stakeholders, we will be meanwhile, because this system seems to be troublesome, and I told this technician to remain here. Actually, there is a desk here. They are supposed to be stationed here. Why is this thing? Because it's known that this system from time to time, they give problems. I don't know why he decided to disappear. But meanwhile, I think we have to refer to all the slides. I will allow the Chamber of Mines to continue. Everybody has got the slides, so we'll refer to the slides.
Thank you.
Yeah, but you must tell him that he mustn't cause confusion, yeah, because I told him that he must remain. No, it has been giving problem ever since we started, and that's why we said he must remain here. I don't know why he decided to leave. You see.
Mr. Chair, I see it's 11 o'clock. Can I suggest that we adjourn for tea and then maybe come back once all organized?
Honourable Member, you came very, very late, and so we are very much behind now. And we started even very, very late because many other members came 9:30 here. And so we can't afford now. We will not have this tea. We will forfeit the tea. We are continuing now one way until lunchtime, unfortunately. I thought that people must be compensated in the morning for this tea break. So now we don't have a tea break. It's only us who arrive early who are going to forfeit our time because we already have had your tea now early in the morning.
And Mr. Chair, I'm just trying to ensure that there's some organizational skills instead of chaos at the moment.
No, there's no chaos here. The only thing is discipline. I told the technician to remain here. This is what the committee must take as a disciplinary measure. If we take a particular person that remain here, he must remain here. There's no point now that we have this confusion. There's no confusion in the committee. We have been correcting ourselves. The person who's supposed to be here, who is assigned to do this, has decided to defy the order of the committee. That's all that it is. You see? So let's continue with the slides meanwhile. But this technician, I think, has really let us down.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. Good morning, and thank you very much for the opportunity on behalf of the Chamber of Mines to make this submission. As you will notice from page 2 of our slides, there's a contents page which runs through the topics that we intend to address, so you could have recourse to that. The first topic, Mr. Chairman, Honourable Members, appears on page 3 and relates to residue deposits and residue stockpiles. Really what we are talking about here colloquially are mine dumps. Now the existing provisions in the Principal Act, the MPRDA, do not govern what we call old mine dumps, also was held to be the case by the court in De Beers versus Attaqua. The proposal in the bill is that the words be added to the definitions of residue stockpile and residue deposit that would render old dumps also subject to the MPRDA. Now, an example, there are so many examples around Kimberley, Johannesburg, wherever of the old gold dumps and platinum dumps and diamond dumps, and that's really what we are talking about, these old mine dumps. The issue, Mr. Chairman, on page 4 is set out there and really is taken from the judgment in the De Beers Attaqua case. The origin of these mine dumps is that when they're mined, they become owned as movable property by the person who lawfully mined them or by somebody who subsequently acquired them from the person who mined them. And of course, in mining, labor and expense was expended on creating the mine dumps, being material mined from the ground, so that really the mine dumps are like, you could imagine, sacks of gold or diamonds lying there on the surface of the earth, indeed still mixed up with soil. But both are movable property owned by the person who lawfully mined them. They're no longer mineral resources in the ground. They have been mined. So that in common parlance, one would not generally refer to working of dumps as being mining. That the working in dumps is really processing. These dumps, of course, are worth, as we understand, hundreds of billions of rand based on a figure provided by one of the chamber members. If these old dumps are now to be governed by the MPRDA, it would have the effect that that movable property constituted by the dumps would be expropriated. It's very much clearer where you're dealing with a movable than when you're dealing with a mineral right in the ground. There you have something, it's sitting like a sack of gold, call it that, on the earth, and you're taking it away from the owner. So that really, we believe, we submit, Mr. Chairman, would constitute an expropriation, exposing the state to claims for compensation in the order of hundreds of billions of rand. On page 5, Mr. Chairman, honourable members, we refer to the fact that there are no transitional periods for these old dumps. Because they weren't governed initially in terms of the MPRDA, the transitional periods of 1, 2, and 5 years to re-establish oneself under the Act do not apply. So if these amendments were to be passed, there would be an immediate expropriation of the dumps, removal of security of tenure in regard to dumps that are indeed being worked right now as we speak, based on the common law rights of the people who own the dumps, or in relation to future processing of these dumps. And of course, there are dire consequences to that. There's financial loss for the company. The workforce is in danger because if the Act is passed immediately, the person working the dump can't do so anymore. Investor confidence is, of course, shaken, and the share price of the affected company will be detrimentally affected. And this, Mr. Chairman, applies even to dumps at operating mines, because on conversion of the old order right, the old order right ceases to exist. That statutorily changes the definition, the applicable definition, from being a stockpile to being a deposit, and anybody can now apply for a right, even on in respect of dumps at operating mines. And, Honourable Chair, we've actually seen this happening. There have been applications lodged by third parties for prospecting or mining rights in respect of dumps at operating mines. Now, that can certainly not be what the legislature intends to do. And even for dumps that are covered by converted rights, ultimately when the converted mining right were to be terminated, that will again convert the stockpile into a deposit. That will trigger an expropriation, and anybody can then apply for a mining right in respect of that dump. So ultimately there would be an expropriation with a claim for compensation. On page 6, Mr. Chair, we draw attention to the fact that even if the dumps are not regulated by the MPRDA, and you may have noticed in the department's reply to this on on page 5 of the department's response, it says that it wants to have the residue deposits and residue stockpiles managed under the MPRDA. That topic was addressed in the De Beers Atterberg case, and the court came to the conclusion that even if these old dumps are not regulated by the MPRDA, they're not unregulated in that they are regulated by other legislation such as the National Environmental Management Act, either the Mine Health and Safety Act or the Occupational Health and Safety Act, and then, of course, on the disposal, the Precious Metals Act and the Diamonds Act. So that was actually a finding by the court. So the Chamber submits that the intention of the legislature in 2002, when the Principal Act was enacted, was in fact correctly not to seek to govern these old mine dumps and to leave them governed by the law of ownership, and as a consequence, the Chamber submits that the amendments, the proposed amendments to the definitions of residue stockpile and residue deposit, which would refer also to holders of what are called old order rights, not proceed, and accordingly the definitions should remain as they currently are. The second topic, Honourable Chair and members, is on page 7 of the slides, the community participation. The MPRDA contained no special provisions other than the normal empowerment provisions in relation to community participation. So there were the normal empowerment and social and labour provisions, but no special provisions for community participation. The bill proposes that the minister be empowered to impose special conditions regarding community participation and other interests. Now, the problem really is that at the stage when an application, or more particularly a conversion, is lodged, the company has already had to comply with the mining charter and with the social and labour plan, and then really ex post facto, the minister then says, oh, well, you know, there's community there, you must also provide, for example, another 10% ownership participation by the community. The Chamber points out on page 8 that the mining charter was the product of a consultative process to which everybody really had delivered input. The proposed clauses would be a duplication of what is contained in the mining charter, the 26% ownership participation, and additionally that there is this timing issue that the company is already compliant at the time when it lodges its application, for example, for conversion, and thereafter there's the additional requirement which goes beyond what is provided for in the charter. So the Chamber submits that the new clauses should be deleted, but if they are retained, then three provisos should be inserted into the relevant three places in the bill where community participation is dealt with. Firstly, that if there is community participation, it fulfills the requirements towards empowerment in the charter and the social and labour plan. Secondly, that before seeking to impose conditions, the minister should take account of the existing arrangements regarding empowerment in the charter, in accordance with the charter, the social and labour plan, and even the perpetuated royalties, to which we'll come back in item 11 in schedule 2 of the MPRDA. And that thirdly, the total empowerment requirement should not, plus the community participation, should not exceed the requirements in the mining charter and the social and labour plan. On page 9, Honourable Chair and members, we deal with the first environmental aspect, the shift of environmental matters to NEMA. And here we are dealing primarily with the NEMA Amendment Bill, Bill 36B, and we'll come on to our own MPRDA Amendment Bill. If I could ask you to turn to page 10. The issues there for us, for the Chamber, are firstly the non-alignment in all respects. We appreciate that the Department has indeed sought to align in many respects, but in some respects the non-alignment of the NEMA Bill with the MPRDA Amendment Bill, and secondly the non-coinciding, touched upon by Mr. Zicolano, the Department, of the coming into operation of the repeals in terms of the MPRDA, which would be immediate, and the insertions into NEMA, which have the staggered 18-month period. The Chamber thus requests this Portfolio Committee to recommend to the Environmental Portfolio Committee and the National Council of Provinces various changes to the NEMA Bill, which we'll mention. The first one, Honourable Chair, on page 11, the final bullet point, if I may just interject, and so I don't intend to run through all these points because obviously we have time constraints. They're all relevant and they're all dealt with in our comprehensive submission. I'll just mention the for us the most important ones. On page 11, the last point, the delegations by the Minister of Minerals and Energy in terms of her powers under NEMA, the Chamber submits, should occur in terms of the delegation provision in the MPRDA rather than the delegation provision in NEMA, just to align the position more fully with the MPRDA position. I'll come back to that in a minute. On page 12 at the top, the Chamber submits that there should not be an appeal from decisions of the Minister of Minerals and Energy to the Minister of Environment Affairs. It feels that it's essentially abhorrent for an appeal to lie from one minister to another minister, much as if this portfolio committee's decisions could be subject to appeal by another portfolio committee's decisions. The two entities, the two ministers, are on the same level rank, and therefore the Chamber believes that the decisions of the Minister of Minerals and Energy should in fact be binding, subject of course to review in terms of the Promotion of Administrative Justice Act. The second point on page 12, the Chamber believes that appeals to the Minister of Minerals and Energy from decisions of her delegates should be governed by the appeal procedure in the MPRDA and not in NEMA, bearing in mind, as we say in the third bullet point, that the differing appeal and review procedures and the timing for the grant of the right and for the issue of the environmental authorization lead to great practical difficulties. You can actually have two parallel streams where you're appealing, say, a refusal of the right. There you go, say, from the Deputy Director General to the Director General to the Minister of Minerals under the MPRDA. Now, if you have this parallel system and the environmental authorization is also refused, there you would go from the Minister of Minerals delegate to the Minister of Minerals to the Minerals to the Minister of Environment, and the procedures and the timing simply don't accord, whereas actually you're dealing with one proposition. You just need two different forms of right or authorization, but it's after all one hole in the ground that you're trying to govern. Honourable Chair and Members, if page 13, please, the top bullet point there, the fifth major point, and this is indeed a major point. Existing approved environmental management plans and programs, the Chamber submits, should be deemed to constitute environmental authorizations for purposes of NEMA. The provisions currently would require an existing holder of an approval who is merely mining because it has all the authorizations that it needs. Now, additionally, to acquire an environmental authorization under NEMA, obviously leading to erosion of security of tenure, double jeopardy, you've now got to go through the hoops yet again, and therefore the Chamber submits that approved EMPs should be deemed to constitute environmental authorizations. And then the second point there, the Chamber understands that the ministerial agreement provided a transition of 18 months, whereby after 18 months, the Minister of Minerals would act as the designated authority under NEMA, but it did not, the Chamber understand, go further to provide that after another 18 months, the Minister of Minerals and Energy simply fades out of the picture altogether and relinquishes all form of authority. So it believes that the clause in NEMA providing the clause 13 read with the schedule to the NEMA amendment bill providing for all references to the Minister of Minerals and Energy to be deleted after a total of 36 months, 18 plus 18, should be deleted so that the Ministry of Minerals and Energy does retain its jurisdiction in regard to environmental matters relating to mining, albeit through NEMA. And then the final dash on page 13, the alignment of the commencement clause of the MPRDA bill with the commencement clause 14 in the NEMA bill. Clause 14 in the NEMA bill provides that the NEMA amendments will take effect on the later of 18 months from the passing of the main clause in the NEMA bill, clause 2, and the present MPRDA amendment bill 10D. whereas Clause 94 of the MPRDA Bill 10D simply provides that it will commence when it's put into effect by notice in the Gazette. So the two simply don't align. You have the repeals happening now, and then nothing. There's a gap because 18 months later, the NEMA amendments take effect. So there's an hiatus for 18 months where, in fact, nothing applies. On page 14, Honourable Chair and members, we deal again with environmental authorisations, but here we are looking more specifically at Bill 10D, in other words, the MPRDA amendment, not the NEMA amendment. If I could ask you to look at page 15, the issues there, the three issues there. The first one that I've already mentioned, that the Minister of Minerals Authority in our bill endures in perpetuity, which the Chamber submits is the correct thing, whereas the NEMA bill, of course, provides for the phasing out of the Ministry of Minerals after a total of 36 months. The second point, again, the point of erosion of security of tenure because of the additional requirement, which is indeed contained in the proposed Section 38B, Clause 32 of our bill, that in addition to having an approved environmental management program, an existing approval, one now also has to get an environmental authorization. And then thirdly, the transitional provisions should provide the Chamber submits that actions done and applications and regulations already made under the MPRDA are not covered by the transitional arrangement, so they are not perpetuated into the new system. So the Chamber submissions, as on page 13, firstly that the Minister of Minerals Authority endure in perpetuity. Firstly, the Minister of Minerals Authority to endure in perpetuity. Secondly, that existing approved environmental management plans and programs be deemed to constitute environmental authorizations under NEMA. And then thirdly, the insertion of additional transitional provisions. Firstly, that actions taken already under the MPRDA or that will continue to be taken for the next 18 months are deemed to be actions taken under NEMA. So if you've done something under the MPRDA, it must be deemed to have, when NEMA comes into operation, to be, have been taken under the corresponding provision of NEMA, simply a transitional flip-flop type of provision. Secondly, the pending applications. You now, at the end of the 18 months, your application for approval of an EMP is still pending. Those pending applications should, the Chamber submits, be processed to finality under the MPRDA because the procedures are so very different. It takes months to prepare an environmental management program, and now fortuitously you haven't made it in time, which may not be your own fault as the applicant. There may be objections and heaven knows what. And that those be stated to be processed to finality under the MPRDA. And then thirdly, that the environmental regulations made under the MPRDA should be stated to remain in force until they are amended or repealed under NEMA, because otherwise, again, you have potentially one has an hiatus, unless, of course, the departments manage to coincide, but there's every potential for a gap. The fifth topic, Honourable Chair and members, on page 17, the amendment of rights and permits and so on, this relates to section 102 of the MPRDA, the Principal Act, whereby the minister is empowered to consent to or approve amendments to mining rights or prospecting rights, exploration rights and so on, which are specifically stated to include extended areas whereby a right can be extended to include an extended area or whereby other minerals can be added to the relevant right or additional shares where the right relates to a two-thirds share, you can add the one-third share and you can add seams and mineralized bodies and strata if the right were to relate only to the bottom coal seam. You can include the penultimate coal seam and so on. Now, the proposal in the bill is to delete the minister's power to extend areas or to add shares. An example being where one has a converted mining right area, because your mining license applied to that particular area, you can only convert that area. But in fact, you have a neighboring area which was an unused area which you would like to add. Now, that would be precluded because the proviso to the section now would be that you can't, the minister can't consent to that. Really, these separations in the example that I gave are really just an artificial creation of the categories of unused right and old order prospecting right and old order mining right in the Act, although, you know, that's only an example that I'm giving. On page 18, therefore, Honourable Chair and members, the issue, one would have to obtain separate new rights for the extended areas or additional shares, and the Chamber submits that that would be detrimental. Firstly, that because in terms of the MPRDA itself, the additional area would be regarded as a separate operation and not a logical progression of the geological strike or extent of the mine, where the area constitutes a unitary operation. So that, for example, you would have to start up mining within a year, although in the logical progression you're actually only going to get to the extended area in 5 years, let's say. Secondly, the new area might be ring-fenced for purposes of income tax, so that you wouldn't be able to set off your capital expenditure on the extended area against income from your main mine. And I say might because there is a discretion in the Income Tax Act accorded to the Minister of Finance. And thirdly, again, the separate area might be treated as a separate mine for purposes of the Mine Health and Safety Act, again, a discretion being vested in the Inspector of Mines as it's whether it would be one or two mines. So now, the concern the Chamber thinks may be that by implementing this amendment procedure, one can circumvent the application procedure that would normally apply to a new area, and the Chamber has sympathy for that concern. And therefore, the Chamber submission is that the existing change, proposed changes to Section 102 be deleted, but that a new provision be inserted in the bill, adding a proviso that if one's dealing with extended areas or additions, the application procedure should be followed, but should then be capable of implementation as an amendment under Section 102. Then you really get the best of both provisions. Page 20, Honourable Chair and members, the sixth topic, refusals of conversions of old order rights. The existing provisions relating to conversion appear in item 7 in Schedule 2 to the Act, and in the interest of security of tenure, do not permit of refusals of conversions. An old order mining right holder is somebody who runs an operating mine. Objects both in the Act itself and in the schedule are to provide security of tenure for lawfully operating mines, and therefore the legislature did not provide for refusal of conversions. The bill now provides that conversions must be refused if the holder doesn't comply with a request by the regional manager to comply within 60 days. In other words, a conversion is lodged, there's something wrong. And it's often so, the social and labour plan doesn't comply here and there. Maybe there's something wrong with empowerment. And the example is indeed, as we say, a mining company has lodged a conversion, is requested then to comply in 60 days, but can't do it in 60 days. And, you know, for example, empowerment is really quite difficult to achieve in a 60-day period. And the consequence of that at the top of page 21. The minister, in the wording of the bill, must refuse the conversion. So there's no discretion. The minister must refuse the conversion. And, of course, the effect of that, your operating mine becomes unlawful and must close that very day. So the issue, firstly, the refusal, the possibility of refusal of conversions is contrary to the investor requirement of security of tenure, and indeed to the object of the Act, to provide security of tenure for mining operations. And the dire consequences that then flow from mine closure, if you just think that you might have lodged your conversion before 30 April next year when the five-year period for lodging conversions terminates, but of course the adjudication of the conversion application may well happen after that, so that on a refusal, the old order right lapses, there's no converted new order right, and the mine must stop that very day. So of course, that triggers financial loss, the workforce now needs to be retrenched, investor confidence, of course, is shattered, particularly if it's a foreign investor. The share price of the company is very detrimentally affected. There have to be notifications to shareholders. And Section 52, which deals with downscaling and retrenchment, would then come into play, Section 52 of the main Act. And, of course, the 60-day period may, in any event, prove to be too short in the particular circumstances. The Chamber submits, therefore, Honourable Chair and members, that the intention of the legislature in 2002 was, in fact, correctly not to permit conversions to be refused. The whole idea was to provide for security of tenure, and it therefore submits that that part of the clause in the bill which deals with these refusals should not proceed and should be deleted. On page 22, we deal with the seventh topic of double royalties. There's no clause which deals with this in the current bill, Mr. Chairman, and the reason why we introduced this is because of the intervention of the royalty bill. It relates to item 11 in Schedule 2 and of our Act, the MPRDA, and the draft royalty bill. The existing provision in item 11 is that community royalties continue to be payable even after conversion. So if a royalty was payable by a company to a community, item 11 provided for the continuance of that. And just to set the record straight, the Chamber has never suggested that the community should not receive the royalty. The proposal in the bill, there is no proposal in the bill dealing with the duplicating effect of the continuance of payments to the community on the one hand and the additional new payment of royalties to the state on the other. To give an example, and one often needs to go back to the origin of these things, the community would have held the mineral rights and granted, say, a mineral lease to a company in consideration for a royalty. That would have been the normal common law way of doing things. In terms of item 11, even when the company converts the mineral lease to a new order right, it must continue paying the royalties to the community. Then, once the royalty bill takes effect after 1 May 2009, in terms of that, the mining company must additionally pay the new royalties to the state. So on page 23, we highlight the issue as being the duplication of the royalties payable, still payable to the community and now additionally payable to the state. The community, as mineral right holder, of course, received the royalties. The effect of the MPRDA, of course, is that the community's mineral rights are taken away and hence also its royalty stream potentially as attaching to the mineral rights would be taken away. So the state owes the community compensation because it's taken the mineral rights and the royalty stream, the compensation being the amount of the royalty stream that the community has lost. Along came item 11, whereby the state said to the mining company, you pay my creditor,
I, the state, owe the community compensation for having taken their mineral rights and their royalty stream. You, the mining company, please pay them, continue to pay them on our behalf. Don't pay me, pay my creditor, says the state. Top of page 24, notwithstanding that the mining company then does so and it complies with item 11, it pays the state's credit to the community, the state in the royalty bill then requires the mining company again to pay the royalty to the state. Well, obviously, that's a duplication. If you think about it, we submit that it's not logical or arithmetical or equitable or, of course, just. The Treasury suggested that the solution is to convert the community royalties into equity. The Chamber submits that that's not a solution because it perpetuates the royalties in a different guise. What it means is you take the total royalty stream projected over the life of mine, present value it to today, the community then acquires shares with that lump sum. That doesn't do away with the royalty, it just changes the nature. It brings it back to a lump sum. No, it doesn't remove the duplication. And secondly, of course, as pointed out by the Treasury, there's nothing compelling a community to convert the royalty into shares. It has the option to do so, but it may not want to do so. So the Chamber submits that there should be a new sub-item inserted into item 11, that's the item which perpetuates the right of the community to receive royalties, and that new sub-item 8 then provides for payment over by the state of an amount equivalent to the royalties that the state gets from the mining company to the community as part compensation for the fact that the state has in fact taken the mineral rights and the royalty stream away from the community, and that the mining company then pay the balance that might still be owing over and above that to the community, to the community. The Chamber submits that that really puts Humpty Dumpty back on the wall. It's an equitable arrangement since, firstly, the community continues to receive its full royalties, and indeed the Chamber agrees with that and has never said anything to the contrary. Secondly, that the mining company continues to pay the same amount as it used to pay, not duplication. It pays what it would have paid had the MPRDA never intervened. And thirdly, the state does indeed receive the royalty, but then pays it over to the community as part compensation to the community for having taken away the mineral rights and the royalty stream accorded to the community. Mr. Chairman, on page 26, the eighth topic, I'll be brief on this, prescription of claims to compensation. The explanation of the department was to the effect that there was a sub-item that was in error left out and which provides that where a claim is accepted, the other two clauses dealt with where a claim is rejected, but where a claim is accepted, a claim for compensation by a mineral right holder were to be accepted by the department under item 12, that prescription begins to run 180 days after the date when there's no agreement. The Chamber thanks the department for having reinstated that clause, but suggests that the wording doesn't indicate exactly when the 180-day period of there being no agreement begins to run, and it has provided the wording in the chief submission which it suggests go in, namely to provide for the 180 days to begin to run from the notice of determination of validity of the claim, either directly by the Director General, or if the Director General has rejected it and the company lodges an appeal, then after the appeal is upheld by the Minister. So this is really just a wording change rather than a change in principle. The ninth topic is really a new issue, validation of invalid rights in terms of the MEPO case. The bill doesn't deal with this, but for the reasons which we'll explain, the Chamber submits that it should. the issue and the problem really is this judgment in the case of Mitho Yase Chaba versus Mr. Kutsa, where the Northern Cape Court held that where a prospecting right had been notarially executed by the regional manager as sub-delegate of the minister's delegate, the deputy director general, that was an invalid action because of the fact that the ministerial delegation provides that the minister's delegate may not further delegate the power given to the delegate without the minister's consent, and in fact there is no such ministerial consent. So the court there found that the particular prospecting right was invalid because it had been executed by the regional manager, and as a second issue also because the terms and conditions of the right had not been determined by the minister's delegate. Now the problem with this, as you will have, I'm sure, seen in the press, is that it potentially affects every single prospecting, exploration, mining or production right that has ever been executed under the MPRDA, which of course is a disastrous consequence. And the Chamber's members are finding difficulty with that, for example, in that they can't now enforce their rights against a landowner who stands at the gate with his shotgun saying, you can't come on here because you have an invalid right. And that is a major problem. We can't even go to court because the court will again, similarly to the Mitho judgment, hold the right to be invalid and unenforceable against the landowner. So the consequence, a huge threat to governance for the department itself, and a huge threat, of course, to security of tenure of the holders of these rights. So the Chamber has approached the Ministry and the department and requests here also that the bill should contain what's called a validation provision. Parliament has the power, obviously, to validate things that go wrong. That indeed a validation provision be inserted in the bill, validating all rights that are vulnerable to being declared invalid on these grounds. Obviously, not everything, but these grounds. And the advantage of a legislative validation is that it's a universal solution. You don't have to say, well, Mr. Kutsa's or Mipo's right is validated and Anglo's right is validated and Billiton's right is validated. It's a universal solution, whereas the existing Section 97(2) in the Act allows the minister retrospectively to confer power on somebody who does something ultra vires. But that's really a case-by-case solution. She would have to take each every right and say, this one is validated and that one's validated. So the Chamber submits that the solution is, in fact, a parliamentary validation, which just validates all of these, unfortunately, potentially invalid rights. Yes, Honourable Members, there are indeed examples of such validation acts in the past, for example, where there was financial expenditure which wasn't authorised, there have been validation acts then to validate that unauthorised expenditure, and similarly a plethora of other types of unauthorised executive action. Finally, Honourable Chair and Members, the question of the commencement of the bill once enacted, the clause 94 in the bill, there are two issues. The first, which we mentioned already, that the commencement of the environmental provisions in the MPRDA bill do not accord with the commencement of the corresponding environmental provisions in the NEMA bill, Bill 36B, therefore potentially leaving a gap between the date when our bill comes into effect and then the 18-month period which the NEMA bill provides will then apply before the NEMA bill takes effect. The two just don't work out, and our colleagues from the department have already mentioned that. The second problem refers to the change to item 12 about compensation, the question of prescription. The wording of clause 94(2) provides that schedule 2 will come into effect retrospectively from the date of commencement of the MPRDA. The intention was really to refer to what currently is Clause 88 in this bill, whereby Item 12 is amended to deal with the aspects of prescription. So it's really just a little wording hiatus. So the submission on page 31, alignment of the commencement dates in the two bills, and secondly, just this little wording change to ensure that it's the amendments brought about by this bill to item 12, not the whole of item 12, which obviously did commence when it commenced, which should commence now. Honourable Chair, we are well aware of the time. Pages 32 and onwards deal with other issues. We don't intend to take up your time with these, but we should like to draw your attention to them so that you know they are worthy of attention. They are just lesser aspects. If I could maybe highlight just a few. On page 33, number 11.5, this duplicating effect, that rights will not be granted if there's unacceptable pollution and there's no environmental authorization. Really, the question of unacceptable pollution is really already wrapped up when you get your environmental authorization. So if you leave both requirements, it's really double jeopardy for the relevant company. 11.6, the question of renewal of prospecting rights, requiring the lodgement of a certificate from the Council of Geoscience. At last year's submissions, we submitted that the certificate should be lodged not when you apply for renewal, because it jeopardizes your ability to apply timeously, but before the grant of the renewal. And in fact, in the B version, that was taken out, and I think probably in error it somehow crept back again. So we're really, in this instance, reiterating something we said and which the committee accepted last year. Page,
I think you must summarize. I think I've taken a little bit long, and I'm wondering whether we are still dealing with the amendment or we are dealing with the, we are starting afresh the whole bill that was already adopted. And if it's like that, then we are doing a very unfairness to the committee, because the original bill has been agreed upon and was adopted and passed. Now, here, the concerns are about the amendments that have been done. I think you can't just go across all the bill as if it was not dealt with. So I think we are confined to the concerns that are about the amendments that have been instituted. And I would like you to confine yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The last comment, it wasn't really a repeat. You see, what happened there was we made our submission. The committee, in fact, reacted. It accepted our submission so that the B version reflected what we had asked for, whereas this D version has again put back the wording that the committee had agreed to take out. That's the only place where, in fact, because of that, you know, unfortunately, we're re-raising something. We're really saying we liked what was in the B version and we were happy with that. And now in this new version, for some reason, the same wording has come back. Please excuse us. We indeed intend to confine ourselves. I don't think we need, Mr. Chair, to deal with any of the other issues here. They're not new issues. We were at pains not to raise new issues. We really intend only to deal with differences between B and D. And I think the other things speak for themselves, and therefore the Chamber thanks you and the team members very much for your attention.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, sorry, just before we stand off, just to mention that in our detailed submissions, we've proposed wording changes for all our proposals. In our slides, there aren't detailed wording proposals, but if you go to our submissions, they have got proposed wording changes. So it's not as though we're just saying change something without proposing words. It's just to draw. So you've got to read our submission, our presentation with the actual detailed submission. Thank you.
Yeah, before allowing the interaction on the concerns that you've raised, I have noted some very sharp points that
that you have raised in terms of the amendment, especially with regard to the establishment of NEMA. You see, especially you are saying, I have heard that you are saying that the powers of, that I think your argument is very correct to say that ministers have got equal powers, so as are portfolio committees, and that it is. Incomprehensible that then this amendment makes one minister to be an appeal minister for the other. I think that point is well captured, but I just want to tell you the context, because I was in that process. We dealt with the process very, very much in detail. You see, why this particular compromise, that's why it's called a compromise agreement, which can only be transitional. It can't hold, it can't be a permanent arrangement, because it can't, as you are saying. But you see, we decided that it should be as such, only for the transitional period, because we looked into everything together with the Portfolio Committee of Environment. We looked into first, the departure point from all of us was that there should be nobody in the whole of the Republic of South Africa who must be exempted from any act that has been agreed to by Parliament, because it passes all these processes before it is established as a law. So there can be nobody exceptional who must be exempt from that. We were agreed, all of us, Department of Minerals and Energy, Environment Department, Portfolio Committees, we agree that we can't have a situation where in a piece of act, some people are given some special treatment. The act should be just universal within the boundaries of the Republic of South Africa. Now, then we had a catch-22 situation where then it was found that if it is like that, the reality is that the environmental department does not have the capacity to deal with the situation in the short term. It cannot, therefore, if it is going to supervise and do full 100% licensing for environment, for mines and something, it's not going to be able to do that, because even as it is, it has got a backlog by itself, let alone now if it gets to then add up what is in the mines already. So that is when we agree that at least, therefore, let us make a compromise agreement to unlock the process so that we don't hold up the process because we say NEMA must take over, and then it becomes a backlog which can be untenable for the next 10 years, you see. And that is why, therefore, we agree that, right, a compromise situation is that, first, in the short term period, the Department of Environment must start training people to understand what is happening in the mines in terms of environmental considerations there. Secondly, it must step up its capacity so that at least in a period of about 3 years, they would be able to have, capacitated themselves to the point where there would be no backlogs and an expertise, problems, a challenge of expertise, especially within the aspects of mining industry. That was the agreement. So it was therefore agreed, therefore, that, right, this process will give effect to MPRDA, because the communities out there need to benefit from this MPRDA. They shouldn't be kept on ransom for a long time, you see. That was the consideration. So, therefore, all what you are saying, the points that you've raised in this connection,
are correct in terms of this appeal of peace. Actually, to quote some words from some, I mean, members of the PROFOCOM, that we cannot define a horse and create a camel to define a horse. A horse is a horse, and a camel is a camel. So if NEMA is to take effect as NEMA, having run through all the constitutional processes expected, it should be therefore applicable to all citizens of South Africa. And if there is any problem about the inconvenience caused, and it can only be looked at as a transitional process to be addressed. And so we were all agreed upon that. So the Act will take its effect full time as it is. In fact, there will be no appeal even for the minister. The appeal that was created, that in any event, therefore, during this transitional period, because NEMA should take effect at the end, if there are any disputes, because the custodian of environmental public good is the Department of Environment, so then it will have to intervene. You see. So I think that is what I want you to understand, because this was a process that took too much painstaking effort in Parliament. Why it arrived into that? But if you see, we were trying to seek a cleanliness of the application of law universally without special privileges to anybody. I think that's understood. But I would like the department to add something over and above that. Just along those lines before I open up the process. Department.
Chairperson, thank you. I agree with you. After all the discussions and the debates with the Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism, that is where the process is at the moment, that we're looking at both periods, 18 months and then the 3-year period. And we are at the hands of Parliament in terms of that issue being addressed and taking it forward. But as it has been pointed out before, that we need the 18 months to transit from the one system to the other. But at the same time, Parliament has informed us, both departments, that it is an anomaly that one minister has both mining and environmental management issues in one, and that needs to be corrected. So we are at that stage. I'm glad that the chairperson has indicated that and gone over it thoroughly. For now, I think. Thank you.
Yeah, I think the another point which is very important, which you raise, is about the gap during the 18 period between the applications. I think the department has to look into that, so that we do not create a vacuum gap in the operations at operations level. I think the department will look into the gap that you have mentioned. That whilst this will be like this, then what if this has not obtained the other side? I think that's a very important. But therefore, I'd like to open up the discussion and see what members' input are in terms of what you have raised. I see Honorable Schmidt there, and Matibela second, Nareng third, Lowe fourth, in that order.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I only have two issues. The one is to the Chamber, if I may deal with that one first. The issue of the double royalties is an issue which Parliament has considered or is busy considering. Shouldn't one, and the argument has always been, that should be dealt with in the mining royalties bill. These proposals, shouldn't they have been incorporated in that regime? Because I'm not exactly sure where the process is, but it's very close to its finalization. It's not. I'm not sure whether it fits into this Act. I might be wrong. It does provide, MPRDA does provide for the payment of royalties, but that's as much as it does. It doesn't say anything else. Doesn't it rather belong in the mining royalties bill? And then to the Anglo-American, if the presenter could just repeat the issue concerning the council, the production of a certificate by from the Council of Geoscience, why that would be undesirable. I'm not quite sure I understand the argument. Thank you.
Thank you. Just before, I think that that's a very important point that you've raised. The money, the royalty bill, actually was even, it wasn't even our committee's bill, it was the finance committee's bill. So it's a money bill, it is. So it's supposed to be raised there, except if there are issues that need at this committee, because it's a money bill. Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. To Chamber of Mines, on page 4, about the dump, material dump of gold, diamonds, etc., which is laying on the ground. I don't know, I'm not sure of what you are saying, because what happens to the old mines that does not have owners? I understand that one of saying where it might even happen where the mine is still on. I understand that one. But the ones where the miners have left long, many, many, many years ago, what should happen to those dumps? And on the community, the agreement of the MPRDA took away minerals rights and hence royalty stream from community. I just want to know previously what was your agreement with the previous government where communities were. Do you understand my question? Is it understood? Thank you. And I think I'll stop there. Thank you.
Yes. Maybe the I just want to check if the Chamber of Mines. See, because what I sense tells me that, you see, the department has made its amendment known, or it has notified them. Meanwhile, you're here and you listened that they had deleted from the main act to the amendment certain deletion, transfers, and alignment. So I just want to get your view, whether in terms of your presentation, you feel that many of the amendments made by the department, stemming from the main act, are actually that harmonize what your concerns are, or they actually send us back into the arguments and the debates which we had when we were dealing with the introduction of the bill, you know, the B amendment, or the bill, the B bill. Because in terms of documentation, maybe they'll give clarification. You've got the original B, which was B10, then you bought the B10B, and the document which is the relevant document, which were actually the subject for discussion. Because the impression which I get earlier on with Anglo-American is that they don't have this document which is B10B. They don't have it. So maybe the problem is that if you don't have a document, it becomes difficult for you to follow the presentation which was made by the department. So after the presentation was made, it was too short a period to actually make a consideration to what they proposed. So maybe the in a way of process, you can agree at some point that we should give processes an opportunity to unfold and study carefully what the changes are and whether these changes are in line with how it's explained and are in line with what the chairperson explained as to what were the debates and arguments originally. And so as we should not find ourselves reinventing the wheel, because we'll end up going into public hearings, which has a bearing on the initial discussions. So the discussion should only be confined to the current concerns, which has to do with the amendments.
Point of clarification, Honorable Chair. Anglo-American did not raise an issue around the existence of the bill. I think it was a point that was raised by colleagues from the Legal Resources Center, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I just wanted to correct that. Yeah, it was Mr. Smith that, from LRC who raised that. Yeah. Right. The next one was Law.
Yes, Chairperson. The presenter, in fact, gave us the details on page 4 of this mine dumps. And but in fact, what I cannot understand is he referring to ownerless mines. Now, what happens when there is liquidation? When there is liquidation, what happened in this case? Because there is a case pending now where there is liquidation with the owner the surface owner and the new owners of the dam. What happened in that case?
I think you had a hand, Mashallah.
Chairperson, is just two things. I think on page 16. Yes. There's an indication of a proposed insertion on the additional transitional provisions, which indicates that there should be a provision made for actions taken under MPRDA to be deemed taken under NEMA. I think straightforward, it's part of the nitty-gritty of the change that is coming up, of which it would be a matter of looking as to whether is it in compliance with NEMA. If really you've got a transitional arrangement, but there's no compliance, the new authority would look as to whether everybody complies. It might not be within the hands of this department as such. But the other one is the issue of conversion. I think the biggest one is the fact that it must be understood that we are representing the interests of the broader community who are disenfranchised, of which somehow the majority party is always kept into constant contact with the very same constituents. Some of these things are coming up because of the demand from the community, where we need to improve on our own legislation, where sometimes the implementation becomes difficult because of some gray areas, and hence these are brought in. But the one that is important is that if we look at page 21, starting from page 20, where you talk about the closure of mine because of non-compliance on the issue of conversion, and the issue of 60 days, to me, it says if somebody cannot comply with the conversion within the 60 days, your example was if in case you cannot find a BE partner. I think it's very important. There's a lot of people out there who want to be involved. There's no way. But it comes back to choosing your partners and also the issue of fronting. sometimes we also look at closing that gap, that if it happens that some of these things have not been done properly, the minister, if she finds that to have been the case, she should be able to handle it. Thanks.
I think I'll allow you to respond to the question so that we can move faster to the next. I think you, both of you, now this session is for both our Anglo-American Chamber of Mine, so that unless you, as you have, you got a specific point to raise, okay, raise it, let's hear.
There was one specific question that was asked of Anglo-American Chair on the Council of Geoscience. I think to clarify, the requirement deals with applications for renewal of prospecting rights, and this requirement for certificate now is inserted or is proposed to be inserted as one of the requirements for application. We think it would cause a delay in processing renewals of prospecting rights. It might actually even preclude the granting of a renewal. We don't disagree with the Chamber's submission on how it can be recouched. But, you know, I think a best-case scenario for Anglo-American would be a removal entirely of the provision as proposed.
I just to clarify, this is the time of response for the Chamber of Mines and Anglo-America. So they can respond anyhow if they feel that the response deals directly with their area of focus.
Honourable Chair and members, thank you. Our colleagues, of course, are sitting down there, Mr. Nicholas Sufi and Mrs. Carol Dixon. So
I'll see the answer. If there is anybody amongst you, Anglo-America, who wants to make an input, just raise your hand, and I'll be able to see from here.
Thank you. The first point was about double royalties and should it not have been dealt with in the royalty bill, and does it fit into the MPRDA? The Royalty Bill, of course, looks at the situation where the state has now become the custodian of the mineral resource. It was item 11 in Schedule 2 to the MPRDA, which provided that the mining company should continue to pay the royalty to the community. So although, as a matter of fairness, the Chamber did raise this in the Portfolio Committee on Finance. The Portfolio Committee on Finance takes the view, well, the state royalty is a universal thing. It must apply to everybody because the state is now the custodian. And although we raised the same issue there, they were not prepared to accommodate it there. Now, as I said, the source of the duplication is really not the state royalty. It's item 11, which as an exception, and a justifiable exception, perpetuates the royalties that were otherwise payable to communities. In all other circumstances where somebody other than a community was the mineral right holder and granted a mineral lease for royalties, those royalties would fall away on conversion. So we've sought in our current submission to focus on item 11 and really read with item 12, because item 12 is the provision in terms whereof if a person can prove, a person in this context being the community, can prove that a provision of the MPRDA caused expropriation of mineral rights, then it has a claim against the state. And as I tried to sketch out, the state, having exposed itself to that claim by taking away the community's mineral rights and hence the ability of the community to continue the mineral lease and thus receive the royalty, owes the community compensation. But in item 11, it really said to the mining companies, you mining companies, please pay the community the compensation that we, the state, would otherwise have had to have paid to the community. And it's there, therefore, that we submit the provision should occur, that the state then says, right, well, we are receiving state royalties, we'll pay over an amount equivalent to the state royalties to the community in satisfaction, in, at least in part, of the state's obligation, and you, the mining company, just pay the difference to the community. But in fairness, Mr. Chairman, this was fully raised with the Portfolio Committee on Finance during the hearings on the royalty bill, but they were not happy to accommodate us there. The second item, Mr. Chairman, is the dump material.
There's always a tendency, I know from stakeholders, that there's always a tendency when they don't win in another fight, then they find their way by back door, knowing very well that actually this does not belong there, but they think that by coming by back door they can win the war. I think that is what you're saying to me.
Chair, on that point, the problem is for the mining industries. Finance said to us, it's because of item 12 of Schedule 2. It's got nothing that we've done. So you're in the wrong forum. That's what finance said to us. It's that legislation that falls under minerals and energy that needs to be changed to deal with the double royalties, not the bill we're making. So we basically come to the forum that, of course, finance said we're not going to do it. So we've now come to the forum to which finance said is the right forum to deal with item 12 of Schedule 2. So it's not that we're forum shopping. We actually went to that forum and were told that that was the wrong forum. So I think one has to understand it's not that we're opportunistic in coming now to raise it because we lost there. We took instructions there that this is the right forum to deal with it.
Yeah, as we say now, you know, anything that is a money bill is a finance asset. We have nothing, there's nothing that we can do in terms of finance. But if it was about the original backbone of MPRDA, and that is why they consult with us when they were dealing with that, and we also asked why we did raise some question about what is the meaning of these royalties in terms. So they explained the way they explained to us, but that question, I think, if it is about why double charge, it should be with them. It's not from MPRDA.
Mr. Chairman, I really don't want to re-comment too much, but you see, the source of the problem is really item 11, which is not a money bill. It was part of the MPRDA from inception. So, you know, really they were saying to us, that is the source that you should be addressing. We, the state, are now levying a new fiscal impost because we are now the custodians of the minerals and everybody must pay that. So really the source of the problem is that item 11 affected the situation of saying to the mining companies, notwithstanding that the communities have lost their rights, and we, the state, now are vested in with those rights, you, the mining company, must pay the community. So the source, as we see it, of the problem, and probably correctly also was told us by the Treasury, the source of the problem is in item 11, and we are trying to suggest a restructuring of item 11, which will result in an equitable solution. It's not a money bill. It's that provision which provides that mining companies must continue to pay communities, and that's where we think the adjustment should occur.
And that is backed up because you didn't have any problem with that for as long as there's no bill of this finance, this money bill about royalties. Now you have a problem. So they say that, no, we are not going to backtrack from this. Go to those ones and see if we can win there. No, but our original bill is very basic and very protective and very beneficial for our communities. It is the second one, which we do not know about. We don't even want to deal with it. It's with where you must go and say, we have been right with our minerals and energy and the way MPRD was structured. It is this royalty that we are now putting in that we do not understand what it is for. And don't come and lobby us that we must change the what was correctly and working correct with all of us, you see. Okay.
Chair, I mean, they said come here, you say go there. So is it the real solution, if you agree on the principle, that the two departments should get together and say, how do we do it? I think it's wrong to send the chamber or the people paying it from one to, because we get to go there and they can say, but we told you to go there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there is a solution, and that is the two departments should talk and say, this is not fair, and if it means a money bill or whatever, then do something. Maybe you need to amend both pieces of legislation like you've done with DEET on the environmental stuff.
Right. Before I allow myself, let me hear what probably the department is responsible in this particular area would be. Let me hear that, so that we don't dwell on things that we are not competent of.
Chairperson, one on the issue of sending us back to National Treasury as a request from the chamber. We have engaged with the chamber, with the National Treasury on this matter. And quite frankly, we don't even see where the double royalty is, as Mr. Anton there is raising, that there is double royalty here. It is not. It's just a community royalty that needs to continue to be paid. And to even indicate this much, the way we've discussed it is the National Treasury. They are leaving it at what it is right now. They don't even want to engage in terms of the percentage or not percentage of that royalty that is payable to the communities, because that was set in terms of some contract or some agreement whenever it was set. But really they've indicated to us that this royalty is payable to the community, and it doesn't mean that thereafter the mining company has got to pay another royalty to the state, because that amounts to the royalty that it's paying on the mineral commodity that it is mining. So this is what I want to raise, Chairperson, that really we cannot engage in another discussion with the National Treasury on this matter.
Okay, let me hear what Honorable Shaba wants to say.
No, Chairperson, frankly speaking, as you were saying, that all along they've not been complaining. But when somebody brings something elsewhere, then it comes back to say maybe it's our laws that are not good. I think the explanation that is coming from the department should also be taken into account, and probably it's where they should be starting debating it. Not meaning that the royalty bill belongs to Minerals and Energies, but at least somehow to give an explanation as to the fact that there's no double jeopardy in the very same new bill that is coming into effect. But I don't think we can be able to discuss it right now, because we are not involved in it at all. Thanks, Chair.
No, I really don't see where this big problem is, because to be honest, if you go to the rural area, say Hamgopani, and there's a platinum mine there, and you can see the mine dumps are coming up and the poor communities are there. I mean, obviously the background in this country has been that mining has been taking place, but it didn't benefit immediately the people. Doesn't it make sense that in a new democracy all of us want to see not just a national benefit, but also the immediate impact of riches that are there, making a difference in people's lives? I mean, where there are royalties and people can use these royalties to build car roads which haven't been there for centuries, and mining has been taking place for centuries in this country. I just thought out of human concern, you'd also want to see it making that type of an impact. You can't just have a community in a village that is having it tough and mining is taking place. You just see dumps. The best they are getting out of that mining is dumps that are there. I mean, if there's a royalty and it benefits the immediate community and it can also benefit national government, where is that? Why are we not having that concern that for the first time all of us would like to see the riches of Africa benefiting Africans, the impact being there with the immediate community even before it can benefit people mention that. I really don't see. I just think we're defending something. In disguise, this is what has been happening, and we don't want to change history. And this is the big challenge for this country, I think. Thanks, Chair.
That's a very good input. I don't know anybody who has a welfare heart and mind can really oppose that. Right. I think that's a very, very good input from Honorable Kekane. The whole aim of this piece of legislation, in particular MPRTA, is to address this kind of pattern of concern. But if indeed we are trying to promote a caring society, we don't have to even debate about issues like this. We need to be thinking how to do it, how to make it successful without jeopardizing each other's operational activities and of course, markets. Yes.
Mr. Chairman, just to clarify, although I'm sure the Chamber and its members agree with the sentiment, we did, you know, we were at pains to say that we agree that the community must continue to receive the same amount as heretofore it has been receiving. So, you know, there's no question of taking the royalty away from the community. The problem is the double effect of continuing the royalty and the state actually having taken the mineral rights away. The mineral rights, after all, Mr. Chairman, are the origin of the royalty. That, you know, one has to go back to the origin of all of this. Why did the community receive the royalty? Because it was the mineral right holder. It was usually tribal trust land, as you know, that was involved, where the tribe had granted a mineral lease or had granted a cession of a mining lease to the mining company. So it was the holding of the mineral right that triggered the royalty. The state has taken away the mineral rights from the community. So really, the state owes the community the royalty stream, and the state has said to the mining company, you, the mining company, please continue to pay the royalty stream, which we would otherwise have had to have compensated the community for. So it's really just a matter of trying to get the arithmetic to balance, that the state should be paying over the amount of the state royalty it now receives to the community, and the balance must be remain payable by the mining company to the community. So the community gets what it got before. No reduction, no change. The mining company pays what it pays before, you know, by way of partial state royalty and then the balance of the community royalty. So the link in the whole thing is the state, which really needs to accept that because it has taken the mineral rights away from the community, it is not entitled, and it requires the mining company to continue paying the community, it can't receive the full amount of state royalty. It must pay over the equivalent amount to the community. So much as we agree with the equities and so on, the inequity, in fact, lies in the fact that the state is saying to the mining company, you must pay twice. Whereas in every other circumstance where mineral rights have been taken away from a mineral right holder other than a community, the royalty that mineral right holder would have received fell away. It's gone. The mining company doesn't continue to pay that. So it will pay state royalties. And, well, if that mineral right holder thinks it has a claim for compensation against the state, it may lodge a claim for compensation. If that claim were upheld, then the state will have to pay compensation. If it's not upheld, well, bad luck to the mineral right holder. The community is an exception where the state has said to the mining company, notwithstanding that the mineral rights that were really the justification for the payment of the royalty are no longer vested in the community, they're vested in the state. You, the mining company, must continue to pay the royalty to the community. So it's really that drawing that we tried to sketch out, Mr. Chairman.
In time, if we are not careful, we won't be able to really finish. I think at this level, I'm sure, then other
netizen questions will be dealt with by the department. I think they have understood your concerns. They are going to look into them when we then finalize this bill, all the concerns that you have raised, and they are still.
Sorry, Mr. Chirac. That was only the first response. I think allied to that, a member asked before, how did the government get involved in contractual royalties under the old regime? The answer there is that really it was a common law situation, that the community, the tribe really, as it would have been, held the mineral rights. So the trustee of the tribe would have agreed then to grant a mineral lease to a mining company or to cede a mining lease to the mining company and would have imposed the royalty. But in all other cases not involving trustees, where the minister was not the trustee, that was simply a common law arrangement, the origin of which was simply that the relevant person or community was the mineral right holder and could allow a mining company the right to mine in consideration for a royalty. If I could...
I just want you to, because here it's Parliament, I just want to correct you. You see, in those communities that live around mining sites, it may not necessarily be what a single tribe. So I've heard you referring them as tribes, but I think the proper term is communities, because we do not know. Otherwise, you may find that Shangan and Sut and Bedis are living there. So if you say tribe, then you are causing xenophobia. You see.
Correction accepted, Mr. Chairman. If I could turn to the dumps. Yes, I think the questions put had a similarity. Namely, the question was, well, what if the dumps have been abandoned and there's no owner, what happens to the dumps? The common law really looks after that in that it provides that where things are abandoned, the state becomes the owner. So the dumps would become what are called bona vacantia, and they would fall to the state. So in those circumstances, really, the dumps would become owned by the state. Similarly, on liquidation of a company or deregistration of a company, if nobody claims the dumps, then they'll fall to the state. If, however, the liquidator sells the dumps, then, of course, the new owner becomes the common law owner and would be entitled to process the dump for own account. So that would be just a matter of common law ownership. The member asked, do the amendments made by the Department of Minerals and Energy satisfy the gap between Bill B and Bill D and satisfy the concerns that had been raised? Maybe I should just clarify, indeed, after Bill B, the Chamber noticed that there were new things in Bill B that were not in the bill as initially introduced, and it then intervened to request the Minister to be able to address those new issues. And of course the big new issue was the environmental issue, but there were also others, being the refusals of conversions which had not been in the initial bill, the question of the old dumps, the extended areas being added to rights. So really, you know, it's those issues on which the Chamber has now focused. And in the response document by the Department, only some of those issues are touched upon, maybe because the Department didn't have our full response until very recently, given the very short timing. You know, they responded on
the corrections about claims to compensation and correctly said the omitted provision has been provided for. We just feel that the wording isn't quite correct. And then the commencement of that change to item 12 is mentioned on page 4 of the response document, but there isn't actually any response to that, but it's such an easy thing that we don't think it should be controversial. In item 3, they mentioned the mine dumps and replied that the bill seeks to impose the obligation and responsibility on the holders of new order rights to manage the dumps. As we explained, even if the old dumps are not governed by the MPRDA, they are regulated by other legislation, as indeed the court held the position to be, namely by NEMA and so on. And then, yes, and then it dealt with community participation. But really didn't answer the issues that we raised. And then the fifth item was the refusals of conversions. The answer is the bill empowers the minister to refuse a right. I don't think this document was intended to deal with the issues which the chamber has now raised, because those issues were dealt with in very broad outline when a submission was made to the minister that we should be afforded the opportunity to make submissions on those new items. I think it would be correct for the chamber to say that the department have indeed done a lot of work to close the gap between Bill B and Bill D, and indeed to effect the transition between the MPRDA and NEMA, and that the chamber indeed appreciates what the department has done in that regard. Unfortunately, when one makes comments, one so often highlights those things that are not done or that one doesn't quite like, rather than by acknowledging all the things that have been done. And indeed, there has been very good work in trying to effect this transition from the MPRDA to NEMA, and we requested our comments be seen as constructive just to help further that process. Yes, the actions under MPRDA deemed to have been taken under NEMA. The Honourable Member mentioned, well, you know, if there's non-compliance, of course the authorities must be able then to intervene. But the starting point is that the actions taken under the MPRDA must nevertheless be recognised as having been taken under the equivalent provisions of NEMA. If there then is non-compliance, indeed, then the Department of the Environment or the Ministry of Minerals, while it has jurisdiction, you know, can intervene. But if you don't, in the first place, deem the actions that have been taken under the MPRDA to have been taken under NEMA, then those actions simply are not recognised at all. It's really more a technical point. And then the final point that was raised was the non-compliance with conversion after being told to fix things up in 60 days. The understanding of the chamber was that the initial intention was that once a reasonable period had been allowed for all conversions to take their course, Schedule 2 would be repealed. In other words, that would bring an end to the possibility of all these possibly lingering conversions where people have been given, you know, years and years really to try to get it right, and some of them, for whatsoever reason, don't get it right. So there always was that fallback position that ultimately the gate should come down and that would be the end of the old rights. But this intervention now really jeopardizes existing operations at quite an early stage. And certainly 60 days, it's true, in our submission we talked about empowerment, we talked about the social and labor plan, but there are other simpler things like the mining work program, which is a technical document, or the business plan, which again is financially technical document, and really to jeopardize the whole operation suddenly is, you know, have very dire consequences, as we pointed out. So the submission of the Chamber is that really there should not be this intervention at this stage, but, you know, after a few years, when most conversions would in fact have washed their way through, because there is interaction between the department and the applicant saying, you know, you need to comply with this provision in the social and labour plan, you need to do that in the mining work program and so on. When that's all washed through and there are still a few intransigent people who are not complying with the requirements, that then eventually the schedule would be repealed, that would bring their old order rights to an end, and that would be the end of the matter. Mr. Chairman, I think I've tried to cover everything.
If everybody is fine now, I think we must. Time now is almost 20 to 1, and according to our schedule, we had said that we will be going to lunch. It's quarter to 1. It may seem that we will have to extend probably the public hearing period more than today, depending how we finish after lunch. But it doesn't matter. We have the time now to deal with the situation as long as it is satisfactory to all. At least we have that support from Parliament. So the reality is that now we can adjourn for lunch and be back at quarter to, I mean, at 1:30 according to our schedule. And the next presentation will be Habitat Cancer at 1:30 when we convene, followed by Weber Wenzel and so forth and so forth. So we'll see how far we go up to the end. But we want to give the process a thorough hearing so that nobody must come here out of here saying that he has been walked over, you see. We want everybody, when we come out of here, to be smiling, to be able to greet another, and to be able to even greet each other when we meet on the road and in town or in the streets or in other conferences. I think that should be the spirit. But also the communities out there, they must be sure when we walk out here that at least they have got their deal, it's back, and it's in full swing. Yeah.
And that to raise is that we should try as much as possible in all presentations outstanding to confine ourselves to fundamental issues which are making the amendment possible. Because if we go haywire on issues, it becomes a problem, and it's on our time. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Naren. Yeah, I think the incoming speakers will hit the appeal from the committee that we stick to the amendments as they disturb you, because all of us are agree that we were happy with the original MPRDA as it was existing, and the, all the concerns arise out of the D-draft, and so we must confine ourselves to what concerns us in the D-draft so that you address that once and for all, and we finalize this issue. Thank you very much. We will adjourn for lunch until 1:30 then.